Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello, Rank Squad. Welcome to Ranks FC, one of the most special episodes of 2026. And that's not just because it's the start of the year. It's because we've got a special guest. We've got Sam Ty in the building. Hello, mate.
Hello, mate. Special because Jack's not here.
It's just special because you're here, mate. Like, it's like the old days, like just seeing your face on my screen. It's like rolling back the years. How you been?
Yeah, very, very good, mate. Thank you. Very good. Yes, I started doing a little bit of prep work for this podcast.
Wow, it's more than we all need to do. So well done.
Yes. Do you remember when one of the people on this podcast used to do some prep work? The golden era, they call it, in the streets. I started listing out a little ranking 5-1. I think I got a heart flutter.
Oh.
Real flashbacks.
Oh. Well, you're obviously still here. You have a presence. You do the truth. So the people have been hearing your voice. And yep. You're still out there doing your ESPN stuff. And I'm sure people have been hearing you on the Sky pods and stuff like that you've been doing. So... well done for staying relevant, mate.
The fight continues
for all of us, my friend. The fight always continues in this weird old industry. Today, the main episode will be ranking the transfers that we have seen so far in the window. Obviously, very early days, but it's been a relatively fast start from some clubs in particular, and there's still little storylines happening around them. But what's been even more surprising, I guess, than transfers is we've had probably more sackings than actually good transfers so far, Sam, because Chelsea ditched Maresca, Man United have ditched Amorim, and Nuno Espirito Santo and Thomas Frank are kind of just like huddled up in the corner together at the moment, wondering what they should do. So it's been very interesting. Before I get your feelings on the two situations, which are kind of linked, given the way that both managers almost left their bosses with no choice but to sack them. I got a few takes from the Rank Squad. So over on the Patreon, I opened up a little forum for people to give their takes, and I've got a few of them here. Sorry if yours isn't read out, but I couldn't go through all of them on this episode. But Chris Cribbins said, "I'm not even a Man United fan, but I have got a rant. I find it staggering how we talk about Man United. They are fundamentally a broken club. And for no other club do we know the names of all their senior executives." He says, "When they hired them, they made it seem like the Avengers of football executives. What has come with this football club? I don't know anyone else, apart from maybe Chelsea, where we can all actually name the people making the decisions upstairs. Priorities and egos in all the wrong places." So I liked that one. Hamza, he says this: "Stupid team, stupid club, stupid ownership, stupid Amorim." You didn't know which team I was going to talk about there, did you? You didn't know.
Well, actually wasn't sure.
He said, "I was having lunch with a friend when the news broke, and it was genuinely a moment of what is going on here. Can someone please explain to me what the point of finishing 15th was and then telling everybody the good times are coming, only to then sack him for being frustrated even though results are fine and the team has almost definitely improved from last season? Was Amorim the best manager this club's had? Absolutely not, but he had a vision he was hired for, and not only will you force him to change that vision, you'll fire the guy when he becomes frustrated about it." So Hamza's not very happy about the decision making. Colm, he's got a take on Maresca. He says, "If the stories about him being in regular contact with Man City about taking over from Pep are true, then getting rid of him is absolutely the right call. The optics of losing him to City, if we had a decent season, would be crushing and would effectively be accepting a role in City's shadow." And then Sam Adelman says, "In an analytical world, I feel like these decisions are being made out of emotion. We never fully know what's going on, but it's unreal that both these clubs have been on this revolving door of managers for over a decade now. It never gives the players a chance to settle, and that's where these clubs are ultimately failing. No stability in a long-term sense. Surely good managers cannot look at these jobs and think they'll be given a chance, no matter what is told to them by the ownership." So I think those four or five comments sum up pretty well the mess that we see ourselves in. Do you think there was ever a chance of either of those managers surviving? And what do you see happening next?
So surviving the season or surviving the situation they found themselves in? Because I didn't really see this coming from Enzo Maresca until, it within a space of about 48 hours completely melted away. So I guess we can start
there.
It's
like he went to the pub for a day and just came back very angry.
Oh man, it was remarkable that within 48 hours it all melted down and the way it did. You know, it was like got a whiff of it, didn't we, on like New Year's Eve, and then New Year's Day he was gone.
Mate, it was so annoying. It was like going to bed, like knowing like I was out on New Year's Eve and you're just like, I've written a story about it for Flash Score, but I was like, oh, I just know something's going to happen in the night here. And obviously, like, because I'm in a different time zone here, like, I don't know what time you sat, like 3 o'clock in the morning or something. And I was just like, just basically threw my phone across the room.
Yeah, no good. Look, there's been some interesting reporting going on around Maresca, and you might be able to guide me on what I should believe or not believe, but clearly both sides are briefing because Maresca's people are saying one thing and Chelsea are saying another. It looks like a pretty messy divorce at the end of the day. And when you get stories that contradict each other coming out and certain journalists and stuff, it is difficult to know what to believe. But from what I can gather, he has been in contact with Manchester City on a couple of occasions over the last 6 months. It's a huge red flag. Like because not only is he not focusing on his current job, but he's dreaming of bigger and better things. So one of those rants or statements that you read out, I think was pretty bang on, because if Chelsea were to let Enzo Maresca, well, stay on for the rest of the season, and then he was like, right, I'm going to City now, you know, if Pep Guardiola were to leave, it does say something about the food chain, and it will say something that Chelsea don't like. So whether or not that's damage limitation from their perspective, getting in early and stopping that from happening in such a direct sense, I don't know. But regardless, you don't want your manager to be flirting with other opportunities trying to win trophies. So I'm not surprised that he didn't make it out of this situation alive, because I think it's a really silly situation to put yourself in.
Yeah. The funniest thing about it is I don't even think he's going to get the job of succeeding Pep. I'm still convinced it's going to be Vincent Kompany. Like,
And I don't think Pep's going to leave in the
summer. I don't either.
So I think it's all happening way too early.
I can't believe that Man City would be looking at signing Semenyo, signing Mark Gahey, signing Elliot Anderson, and then Pep's like, well, that's cool, I'm off. No, I can't see that. I can't see it for the life of me. So it all seemed a very strange vision from Maresca. I can understand why they wouldn't want him to hang around. Amorim, obviously, it seems like he'd had a row with Jason Wilcox before the game, and then he's just said that afterwards to just like draw a line under everything, basically. But those two actually got on pretty well. Like, throughout the time together, I've understood that they had pretty much daily briefings, like they had coffee together. Like, we've seen pictures of them at train stations laughing together. Wilcox has been a fan of his. Like, he hasn't been telling him throughout his reign that he had to change tactics. That's not his job. And you know what? I have some sympathy for Amorim, because he's the one who has to sit there every week and take all the stick, take all the questions about whatever it is at the football club that's going on. And he's done, I'm not saying he's been remarkable, particularly in game, but his job, and as he was told at the beginning of the season, stay in contention for Champions League football. Like, be in that conversation, and we'll sign in these players in the summer. Did he want all of them? No, I don't think he wanted Cesco and stuff like that, but he got a striker, blah, blah, blah. And then in the winter window, we'll get you a midfielder, and then we'll go against the end of the season, and then we'll keep building, and then in 2028, we'll win the league. and he's got to this point, and suddenly they're like, well, none of the midfielders we like are available. Okay, well, what are you going to do about that? Nothing. Okay, cool. I'll just keep playing Casemiro until he completely breaks. And he's like, he's doing his job as best as he can, and they are like fifth, sixth in the league, wherever they are right now. And then he's thinking, hang on, what is Vivel doing? What is Berada doing?
Like, you're all worried about what I'm doing on the pitch. Why can't you sign me a midfielder? You've had 5 months to go and sign someone, and you haven't got me anyone. You're literally telling me...
And you had the whole summer.
You've had the whole of that summer. You've had the whole of the season so far. You've gone and, for some reason, tried to sign Semenyo, right? Which I don't think personally was, like, completely necessary, but I can see from a long-term perspective why you might want him. Fine.
They just love a release clause, don't they? They just like it when the price is set.
But then, what are you all doing? Why are you all so worried about me? Do you know what I mean?
Mm. Yeah, it's tricky. I find this one as a situation really tough to gauge. And part of that is because, like, sometimes I read sort of posts and stuff from Manchester United fans who have really, like, specific gripes with Amorim, like in-game substitutions, for example. And it's not just swapping the centre-backs around, which, to be fair, is quite annoying. It's not a deal-breaker, but it's quite annoying and it's quite weird. And his insistence on doing that is not great. But also his other in-game substitutions, you know, what he does when they're trying to defend the league, lead, what they're doing when they're trying to control a game. He's quite bad at all of those too. So these little details that fans pick up on, and they get quite sick of managers when this happens over and over again. I can't really sit here and say that it was the wrong decision to sack him, even if the performances have been getting better. Their underlying numbers are looking pretty good. I think like third for XG, third for XGA, third for...
They have got better.
They were playing better football, and they were probably playing the best football of his reign until the Christmas period where 3 or 4 players left for AFCON and Bruno got injured for the first time in forever and it's all come... and Casemiro got suspended and Manu got injured and like De Ligt is out and like it has come crumbling down and he's missing 6 or 7 players. So some sympathies there that it turned so fast on him. However, over the course of 14 months, they clearly have got to the point where they're like, well, you're not our guy. He does say some weird stuff in press conferences, and I'm not just talking about the Leeds conference, he was literally sat there begging to be sacked, wasn't he? If we're being completely honest, I'm the manager, not the head coach, la 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 la. And then the weird one the other week where he was like, you're always asking me to talk about changing shape. Well, I'm not changing shape until we're playing well, because if I change shape when we're playing badly, you lot will all think that you've got to me and that I've changed shape because of you, the media. Yeah. And I'm like, well, first of all, that's stupid. You can't start thinking about what people think about you because you manage Manchester United. Ignore everyone else. Second of all, if you're playing well, why would you change shape? So a bit of a flawed argument to begin with. And it's like, you're watching these incidents and these comments and these outbursts pile up. You're tallying it up with these in-game substitution concerns, the in-game management concerns, the constant flicking around of centre-backs and destabilising things. And you just kind of get to the point where you're like 14 months in, you're a bit like, well, this hasn't been great. And while I appreciate your point, you say that they're, you know, a stone's throw from the Champions League places, they're also 4 points above 14th. So the table, unless you're Arsenal, Manchester City, Aston Villa, or West Ham and down, the table doesn't mean a lot right now. So really it's about whether or not they believe in him, because you're in the January window and you know he's asking for players. You know he's asking for a midfielder. So you ask yourself the question, do I want to back this manager with a big signing? And if you don't believe in the man, you shouldn't back him with a £70 million player like Elliot Anderson or whatever it might be.
Yeah, but then you look at it now, why would Elliot Anderson now join Man United when he might be wanted by Man City?
Of course, you're just
not going to make that decision. Like, as a transfer target, you're going to look at the offers and be like, I just don't know what I'm getting from this football club. I thought you had a plan. You said you were going to win the league by 2028. And there's absolutely no way that anyone can believe that. Let's throw it forward a little bit. Just quickly, Liam Rossignol, as we're recording this, has been announced today on a 6-year contract.
2030, baby.
I mean,
why?
Why? Why?
They just can't be stopped, can they?
Like, I get it. With a player, they have a resale value, right? Liam Rossignol doesn't. You didn't need...
It makes absolutely no sense to do
this. I know he had a long contract at Strasbourg, and I get it. But, like, Liam Rossignol surely wasn't turning this down if you gave him a 3-year contract, right?
I don't think he...
No, 18 months he'd have taken it,
surely.
I reckon.
Surely. So that's utterly bizarre. I don't think he'll do as bad as some people do, because I think that with what he's got at his disposal and the quality of the Premier League this season, there's a floor to how far down they can go, and that there's always fourth place up for grabs if they have a good run. So I don't think that can go too badly. Where do you see Liam Rossignol appointment heading?
Well, I don't know much about him as a manager, but my concern here is not about who it is that they've replaced Enzo Maresca with. I think my concern is that it doesn't matter who it is. I think that Chelsea's conditioning for the season because of the Club World Cup is in such bad shape. Yeah. And I've laboured this point a lot on the truth, so apologies for all those that are listening that have heard me say it over and over. But like, from a physical perspective, I just don't think they're going to be able to cope. And I've already seen through December them basically slide off. And I watched them play against Villa, and I watched them press the life out of Villa for 60 minutes and then just droop and get cut to ribbons and lose. I think this team is screwed because of the Club World Cup. And I don't think changing a manager can be a substitute for anything. It can't magically repair players' conditions. It can't find that element of sharpness and that fitness that they are going to be lacking for the rest of the season. So I feel a bit for Rossignol here, because I don't know what his ideas were here and how desperate he was to take the job. Obviously, he'll say everything that he needs to say. It's an honour, it's a privilege,
etc.
And of course, you can't turn the job down. Has he sort of been foisted into this? And has he been given a squad that has very high expectations and genuinely won't be able to keep up because of the schedule? And will he just kind of sink? Those are my worries. And that's all based on the fact I don't even know anything about him as a manager.
Yeah, and that's
it's all about the situation that he steps into, which is completely out of his control, but for the bit where you could say no. But you can't really say no.
You can't say no, but if that does open up in the way that you're describing, you're not going to get through the season, because it will be reflected on him and the fan base won't accept it. They've already got protests this week against the board. They, you know, match-going fans, I don't think this is anything against Liam Rossignol himself, but they're like, this guy doesn't have the pedigree and profile to manage us right now. So if we get to March, April, and Chelsea are eighth because they can't keep up in the second half of games, then it's just inevitable that he takes the flak for that. And look, maybe they try doing what they did with Graham Potter and see it through. But it only gets you so far, and it's a level of naivety. And, you know, it's Brighton 2.0, but they're trying it on a stage that is just like so, so different. And it just can't.
I've seen a statement from the Strasbourg Supporters Federation. They're appalled by this. You know, they're obviously very unhappy as a fan base, because they are, you know, the feeder club to Chelsea, and they feel like they've been treated very poorly. But there's a statement that says, the transfer of Liam Rossignol marks another humiliating step in rassing Strasbourg's subservience to Chelsea. I mean, that they've ruined everything here, because Rossignol was doing really well at Strasbourg and they were really happy with him. And so if this doesn't go well for Chelsea, they've ruined Chelsea and Strasbourg.
Yeah, there is that. Just finally, we won't really go into the Man United managerial situation in terms of what comes next, because we don't know.
Give it Giggsy to the end of the season.
Like, it might be Ollie to the end of the season as we record this. Who knows? Michael Carrick also wants it. Darren Fletcher. I mean, just give it to all of them. Just have them all stood along the sideline. Anyone's ever been good.
Dwight York would take the job 100%.
Just have every legend standing along the pitch for every game, telling them all where to go. Who finishes this season higher, Chelsea or Man United?
Tough,
geez. Right?
Yeah, it's really tough. I've got very little faith in either of them, really, to be honest with you. Because, let's go with Chelsea. Yeah,
despite the fact that they can't play the second half of most games.
I just think the atmosphere around Man United is so bad and like the question marks that are thrown up now about the process. And for the first time, really, in the last couple of days, I've seen people question, you know, Sir Jim Ratcliffe and Ineos, like quite, like not just, not sure about this. It's moved to like, hang on, are this lot just as bad?
Yeah.
You know, and once you start down that path, it gets quite toxic. And let's be honest, Man United has not been without toxicity over the last couple of years anyway. So I'd be a bit fearful about what that creates, to be honest. Yeah.
Crazy stuff. Right, that will do us for part one. Come back in part two, where we get to what we're actually supposed to be discussing in this podcast, which is transfer deals that we've seen so far in January. Welcome back to Ranks FC and part two, where things are going to get serious because we are dissecting some business, Sam. And this is where you come into your own. You know, I miss you on these parts, mate, because I'm having to do far too much work these days of actually ranking things for myself. So the Rank God is back. And, you know, it's only been a week that the transfer window's been open. But there have been some deals. And I'm very intrigued as to know what the best five have been from your perspective.
Yeah, people are saying it's been a quiet start to the window.
I disagree.
I've got five top deals and I've got another four honourable mentions to talk about. Not to say they're great deals, but they've happened. So we're 6 days into January, and I can point to at least nine substantial deals that have happened. Guys, you got to adjust your expectations.
Yes, you know? January.
This is good stuff. So I think we'll launch into the ranking, and then we can maybe tack on some of the names at the end. And I'll start at number five. Just like old days. And we'll go for Brennan Johnson to Crystal Palace. You may be surprised to see this as low as five, because I've seen quite a lot of love for this deal, actually. And I feel like the sourpuss on the outside sort of crossing my arms going, well, you know, it's all right, but I've got my concerns. So I've got it down at number five. And the reason why is because he's quite a limited player, isn't he? And so I struggle to get too excited about a player who basically does two things really well. Now, that's not to discredit those two things. He's really fast and he scores goals at the back post.
I thought you were going to say he scores Europa League final winners.
Of course. He saves entire club seasons.
This is what he's doing again.
Palace look like they might be in need of saving right now. So we will see. They're in some deep doo-doo because of some absolutely horrendous scheduling. I feel very sorry for them. But I'll give this deal a few brownie points, actually, because it got done so quickly. Palace did not have time to spend 5 or 6 or 7 days or 2 weeks hashing this deal out, because if they'd have done that, by the time he arrived, Ismail Assar would have been back from Africa Cup of Nations anyway. What they needed was a player on January the 1st, and they got this one done on January the 2nd. They got him in time to play against Newcastle. Well done, because often you see the obvious need for these deals and you don't really see a reason why they wouldn't just happen very quickly, and yet they very often take ages. So Palace have got this one sorted.
Yeah.
I think he suits Glasner, and at 24, homegrown, there's probably enough legs in this deal for him to provide some good value. But to be clear, £35 million is not a small amount of money. And when Ismail Assar is back from AFCON, arguably, Brennan Johnson does not get into Crystal Palace's strongest 11.
Yeah, that's
so true. From that perspective, I do have a couple of concerns. Throwing it all the way forward, let's just say, for example, that Oliver Glasner leaves Palace at the end of the season and they pick up a different coach and he decides to play a 4-2-3-1, then Jeremy Pino will play in the 10 and Saar and Johnson will play on the flanks and we're all good. So there by no means is this terminal, and I'm not trying to criticise this deal too much. However, £35 million with a couple of concerns, it gets you in at five.
Yeah, I think there's a high chance that does happen. Like, I think Glasner is leaving Crystal Palace. I think that they are expecting that to happen. And as you say, the likelihood is that that shape changes as a result. And I think Brennan Johnson, at £35 million, it's actually not a bad price, because so often we see like a Premier League wide attacker valued immediately at 55 to 60, right? Seems like...
We'll get to one of those shortly, actually. Yeah,
exactly. It's just the direction of travel as soon as you start talking about someone. And obviously, Tottenham have had to take a bit of a hit on Brennan Johnson as it is. I was surprised at how fast it happened too. I think I wrote
it was like the first week or so of December, I was told that Tottenham would consider offers for Brennan Johnson. And I was quite tentative actually about writing it at the time. And I assumed it would probably be the end of this. I was like, well, his contract's got, I think it was on till 2028 at Tottenham. I was like, okay, well, it kind of makes sense that if they get to the end of this season and Brennan Johnson's not in the plans, and that's when you sell him anyway, because it's 2026, you're not going to renew. So it makes sense that you sell. So anyway, I went with it. And very quickly, maybe even the next day, the Telegraph reported that Palace were interested. Then there was a couple of other teams. I thought Aston Villa might be in the hunt at one point. But I don't think it's bad when you consider, you know, Elise, Eze, those spots opening up. Do I think that Brennan Johnson's as good as those players? I don't know. And I think he's a different type of player too, but not a bad player. And I think that any manager that comes in now knows that they've got a good player in Brennan Johnson in that position. I also think that Palace are going to be very careful about who else is actually allowed to leave. You know, we read about Mateta and Wharton and Munoz and Gehi and Glasner all leaving this year. There's no way they're going to let all of those people leave the club at the same time. So yeah, Gehi will go and Glasner will go. And you'll probably have to let Wharton go if a high enough offer lands. But I don't fancy actually Mateta and Munoz's chances of getting out of here anytime soon.
No, that's the Carl Walker-Peters syndrome where everyone gets sold and then you have to tell one of the lads to stay on the ship as it sinks. So sorry, mate, you can't go because they all
exactly that.
And just on the taking a hit thing, technically they've taken a hit because they spent about 47, 48 million on him and they've ended up getting about 35 back. So in overall terms, it's a hit, but you know, not to be relentlessly boring, but the way these fees are amortized and the way they're put on the books, you know, Brennan Johnson costs about 9.5 million per year. They're halfway through a 5-year contract. He's got about £24 million left on his book fee, his book cost. So Spurs are actually posting an accounting
profit. And he scored goals that actually made them more than that.
And he scored one particular goal that was quite important. And if that costs £15 million, then so be it. So ultimately, this is a very, very strong sale from Spurs. And it's also something that Spurs are really bad at. They always let players just hang around on the books, get to the last year of the deal, and then they end up like they're slipping away, off on loan. Gio Lo Celso, all those guys, they just never seem to leave until it's like way too late and they can only get 4 million
Lo
Celso's euros.
Still there if you look carefully.
So basically, well done Spurs and relatively well done Palace here. Like, I think it's a better sale than a purchase, but it's solid enough stuff.
Very good stuff, mate. What's next?
Okay, in number four is Niklas Füllkrug on loan to Milan. So we're raising this from the buying club's perspective, or potential buying club's perspective, from Milan's point of view here, because this is clever, because there's just no risk whatsoever in this deal. Just does nothing. Like, they've borrowed him for a bit. He's reportedly taken a bit of a wage cut to make this happen. They've got it sorted really early. And there's a 5 million euro option at the end of the deal if he impresses. Now, whether or not he makes it onto the pitch long enough to impress enough to justify a 5 million euro fee is anyone's guess, because the lad's had a terrible couple of years with regard to injuries, and it's completely tanked his stock. At the time, West Ham bought him for 30-odd million at age 30, I think. And I was like, are you sure about this? Like, because it's fully sunk cost, right? If this doesn't go well, you are never getting this money back. Zero resale value, and effectively has proved as such. Milan have basically just pounced here and just, we'll add you to the squad. Yeah. You get 15 minutes off the bench. You suit Allegri. It's an extra body for the second half of the season if we're busy. I just think it's good. It's good, cheap, no risk January work. And January, for the most part, let's be honest, it is about plastering. Right, you don't change the structure of a team in January. You try not to. You're supposed to just plug in the holes. And this is good stuff for Milan. It's not great for West Ham, but it is what it is.
So, this is the problem I have with it. Not only are they letting Füllkrug go to AC Milan, right? If AC Milan are after one of your players, immediately alarm bells would be ringing for me. So, okay, so we're in a relegation battle. We have decided that his striker's not good enough for us, but AC Milan want him, who are much better than us.
Yeah.
Okay,
it's a bit like when Bryson come in for your wonder kid. You're like, wait, like, how good is this guy again?
And then you're suddenly signing Tati Castellanos and Pablo. Right. Who, Pablo is, I mean, a risk. I don't know what we're getting.
Yeah, spoiler alert, they're not in this list.
So I'm going to talk about them quickly now, because my feeling is that West Ham have signed two strikers who are worse than the one they got rid of. That's the feeling I've got. And now maybe they suit Nuno better, because Nuno didn't fancy Falkrug. But look, West Ham are about to play as we record this podcast. Like, they don't intend to part ways with Nuno. They want to stick by him because they've just got some players for him. But say West Ham lose this game 3-0. Say they lose the next game 3-0, whatever. Say they lose to QPR in the FA Cup and they're, you know, battered at home by a championship team. Whatever. Like, there is a chance that they might have to change manager. Say they then were like, okay, well, our top choice is Slaven Bilic. Slaven Bilic would want Falkrug. He wouldn't want these two. I mean, I think it's a good deal for AC Milan. I am... Like, I can accept that Falkrug has been a bit of a disaster, but like, all number nine signings via West Ham are ultimately a disaster because they're terrible. And I just feel like, you know, there's agents at work who have forced them to overpay for players that aren't actually good enough.
Yeah, there's a list floating around Twitter at the moment. West Ham Fan 86 on Twitter has put a graphic together of the 56 strikers that West Ham have signed since 2010 and asked how many were any good. It's a remarkable list.
Name a few.
Some of Diafra Sakho, he was a good one. Ena Valencia, he was a good one. Simone Zaza.
Why me?
He wasn't a good one.
They thought they got Zaha, but they didn't.
Jordan Hugill, I remember that was a very ill-fated short spell. Sebastian Allaire obviously was a disaster. Scamacca went really badly. Obviously, Callum Wilson's it seems to have gone pretty poorly as well. Who could have foreseen it? The man who was barely fit enough to play 30 minutes did not play very well for West Ham. Look, I kind of agree with you in principle. The problem is that Falkrug basically never made it onto the pitch for West Ham. And because he was so chronically injured, when he actually did get on the pitch, he looked so slow. It was incredible. And like the pace of the Premier League these days.
Yeah, fair enough.
The athleticism on show. He looked like he just did not belong. Now in Serie A, that won't be as much of a problem, and definitely not if you're playing 15 minutes off the bench. Where West Ham are coming into this here, I think, is Pablo is a worker. Like he's a pressing forward. He's a worker, and he's young. He's 22, so they're trying to sharpen up and get a bit more athletic in the forward line there without having to play Bowen there. So I can see where they're coming from, because Wilson can't run and Falkrug can't run. So they've bought two players that can run. It's a good start. It's a good start. Whether they will turn out to be good enough to save them, I don't know. Whether they will be worth, really prove to be worth 50 or so million pounds between them, again, I don't know. We'll have to see. I understand where they're going with this, but it's just like, if we've just criticised them for basically spending too much money on Falkrug and then it not working out and it being a bit of a sunk cost. Well, Tati Castellanos is also a bit of a risk. I like him, but he's a bit of a risk. He's 27. They're paying 25 odd million pounds for him. He'll be on a West Ham striker's wage.
Mm.
They're not doing the exact same thing again, but they are doing something quite similar.
I was told that a month ago, Castellanos was valued internally at £13 million. That's where I start to worry for them. Like, if that's true, like, I've only had it from one source, so I don't know. But it, I don't know.
It's worth remembering that as well, that Lazio have been operating under a transfer ban for the last 6 months, so they haven't been able to add any players, and they're still selling him.
And they can't believe, like, I'm seeing the reaction online, they just cannot believe that they've got this amount of money and that a Premier League club who's in big danger has come in to pay it. But desperate time, desperate measures, right?
It is. Right. To set the record straight on Castellanos, because I do actually quite like him. Like, he's got that kind of, like, you know when you watch certain players and they've got a very nice aesthetic?
Yeah.
He has it. He is, unfortunately, just as willing, just as able, and just as likely to score a bicycle kick as he is to miss from 2 yards. And that is going to annoy people.
Yeah.
So I like a lot of what he does. He's my kind of forward. He'll drop off the forward line. He'll pick a pass. He presses and he works. He gets a lot of yellow cards. Like, he's usually on 10 or 11 per season because he just fouls everyone because he's pressing and working. There's a lot to like there. It's just like, will he miss too many sitters and just annoy too many people? It's possible.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll see how those guys start off. What you got next for us?
Right, at number three, it's Antoine Semenyo, £65 million to Man City.
Mm. Not complete yet.
We're thinking this deal goes through at the
end
of the week.
Yeah.
Right?
I think he'll play this game, have his medical, and then we should... I think by the time we get to the weekend, I'll be surprised if Semenyo's not a Man City player.
Can you remember a scenario where a club has effectively got a deal agreed for a very expensive player and then gone, you know what, just play
it's
two
weird,
more games.
Isn't it?
It's fine.
I'm very surprised he's like still there. Like, the last one didn't surprise me as much, but this one is surprising that he's still in this, you know, the first full week of January had gone and they're still letting him be at Bournemouth.
So they're playing Tottenham,
yeah,
right? So
guaranteed
this game
to score.
This game is completely irrelevant to Manchester City.
Yeah.
The previous game was not irrelevant. If they were thinking, go on, agent Semenyo,
yeah,
stick one in the back of the net against Arsenal, put a dent in their title bid, and then come and join us. It's risky because he could have broken his leg, but I can kind of understand the thought process, even if it's a bit warped. Letting him play against Tottenham is odd. Anyway, I love Semenyo. I think he's great. I think he's a really good player. I've for two and a half years, I've been quite frightened of him because of the way he plays. Like, he's so direct and just like runs at defenders, the two-footedness, the chopping and changing of direction. He's become a very, very good player. But there's another part of me that's just a bit nervous because it's a £65 million deal. Like I said £35 million a lot, but guess what? 65 is way more. And it's become a normal thing for Premier League clubs to just spend £65 million on a player in his mid-20s. And I just don't think it should
be
normal.
Is he £30 million better than Brennan Johnson?
Maybe, yeah. But Brennan Johnson's a £25 million player and Semenyo's 50, Rice's a 50.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like all of those deals that happened last summer that were in the 50 to 65 range, you know, from Xavi Simons up to Brian and Bumo, they were all too expensive. All of them were too expensive by at least £10 million. They're all good players, but they were all... It's so normal for them for teams to spend this much money, and it's weird.
Yeah.
And I feel like the bubble is going to burst at some point, but obviously it's not bursting yet. So I'm a little bit nervous just because, well, I'm a big fan of the player, and for City, I can see the appeal. He's got 20 goals in the last 18 months in the league. They need to diversify the goal-scoring ability in that team. He presses well. He works hard. Like, he's been part of one of the best pressing teams in the Premier League for 3 years. All the boxes are ticked, but it's a lot to, the 65 million pack, it's just a lot to live up to. He'll have to be really, really good. And he's going from playing in a stadium that seats 11,000 people or something to Champions League next to Erling Haaland and Phil Foden.
Yeah.
Like, it's a big step.
Yeah, I mean, where does he fit? Because, like, Cherki's role, Doku's role, what happens to Savinho, Oscar Bob? Like, how does Semenyo actually fit? And I mean, obviously chosen the right club because the other main club in for him was Man United. Imagine he'd chosen that and then they got rid of Amorim the day before he was joining. Like, at least he's in that.
Well, surely that would have been a good thing because then he wouldn't have to play wing back.
That's true, yeah. He's going to be left wing back for Man United. Maybe that's true.
But who knows? I think in terms of a fit, you'd assume that he enters the rotation as a wide attacker. Could he play up front in Haaland's place? I don't know. Like, possibly. I've not seen it, but I guess it's possible. City are doing some funny things with those wing positions, aren't they? They're playing very narrow a lot of the time. And while I would say on paper that may not suit Semenyo as well, on paper it doesn't suit Doku, but Doku is killing it. So I'll put that to one side and say that I think he probably just plays in that support forward role and adds another very, very good player to that team.
I didn't even mention Marmoush, but obviously there's been some rumour about him. City aren't going to... I mean, we've texted about this. Like, there is interest in Marmoush from Tottenham, maybe Aston Villa. And I can see why those clubs would be asking the question. They'd be thinking, hang on, what are you doing with him? Where does Marmoush fit into this? He's already been on the bench. Now you're signing somebody else. So I do find that interesting as well. And I do wonder if not this window, then the end of the season, are City kind of open to Marmoush going? Maybe.
They probably, it seems like it. It's a big risk to let him go with them in January, unless they're like...
It's unnecessary, isn't it?
Unless they're certain that Semenyo can do his job, which is possible. However, if they sell Semenyo to Aston Villa, or loan him to Aston Villa, or whatever it might be, and that's an interesting link because of Aston Villa's Egyptian owner.
Yes.
And the club ambassador is Ahmed El Mahamady.
And there were links out of Egypt about the... that's where the transfer links came from.
So Nassif Sawiris is going to be pulling those strings. Like, you just know it. You just know that that's going to be happening. It's like when an American takes over a Premier League club and they want a flagship American player. It's national bias. But in this case, it's also smart because Villa need quality. Can City afford to give Villa a player right now? Like, looking at the table?
No.
No. So this is why I'm also very sceptical, because the possible out routes are Tottenham. Why would he do that? Villa. Why would City do that? So probably not. But Semenyo's going to have to go in there and tussle with Marmoush, tussle with Savio, and tussle with Doku and Foden and Reinders.
But a good deal.
And hopefully it works out for him.
A good deal for Manchester City.
It is,
as they chase down a possible Premier League title and try to add another. Look, Arsenal have had good rotations in those positions and it's worked out really well for them. Like, even the other day, Arsenal, like, they start Madueke instead of Saka. I thought Madueke was great in the first half. Like, the directness of him was brilliant.
He always plays well, doesn't
Madueke,
he, really,
like,
for Arsenal?
He's trying his best, but you've got to keep Saka out of the team, and that's never going to be easy. What's next? Where are we at? Number two?
We're at number two and we're talking João Cancelo loan to Barcelona. How do they do it?
Yeah, man. Like,
how do they do it? They just find ways to get really good deals done, even though they seem to be in a terrible, terrible, terrible negotiating position every single time. Fair play. They're borrowing Cancelo for 6 months and they're covering a portion of his wages. And you know the money means nothing to Al Hilal, right? Like, just nothing. They buy players for 40, 50, 60 million. And then when those players after 18 months go, oh, I don't want to be here anymore, they go, all right, just leave then. It doesn't matter. It's fine. I don't care. The money means nothing. So Barcelona have clearly got themselves a really friendly deal here, which apparently has only been made possible by the fact that Andreas Christensen has got injured again. So I think they've basically deregistered him and created room in the salary cap. So Cancelo's coming in for what is probably, at best, 50% wage coverage, possibly less. He's 31 now, but he's still very good. Very, very good. He was once probably the best fullback on the planet. And while he's probably slid a little bit over his time in Saudi, probably not slid that far. Still plays for Portugal. Still very good. And Barca just crying out for defenders, aren't they, this season? Like, just crying out for reinforcements, whatever position it is. And Cancelo has already been loaned to Barcelona once, had a great time of it. That was 23-24 season, I think. So he's familiar surroundings, really good player, just somehow managed to borrow him on the extreme cheap. I just think it's really lucky, good, brilliant, something.
Yeah, well, they just needed a fix, didn't they? They needed another option to go in there at the back. So obviously Barcelona, top of La Liga at the moment, a little buffer over Real Madrid. I think it's 4 points at the moment. But they, like Real Madrid, really, like, they're always at risk of just being exposed in one of those defensive positions. And this just gives them a bit more leeway to suffer a problem and have another body that's got some experience and still good quality to go in there and make sure that it doesn't cost them potentially the season. I mean, that's quite how drastic it could be.
And speaking of cost, like a player of this quality should cost loads of money. It should cost you loads in wages and loads in transfer fees. And they've somehow managed to get away without paying much of any of that.
As they always do.
And they just added it back again. Yeah,
they're never going to spend money again, by the way. Even when they've got all their money, they're like, we're not spending money. We're just going to save it up because we've realised we don't actually need to spend. People just want to join us.
Yeah, it's incredible, isn't it? So yeah, it's a great signing. Not too much more to say about it, really. Just like, wow, you know, and Inter will be really annoyed because Inter were pushing for it. And I mean, based on Fabrizio Romano's tweets, it was, you know, they were more than ready to ship Acerbi off or De Vrij off, you know, please take one.
Ooh. Those guys will be happy now.
But
new problems.
Great
new
stuff.
Problems. Okay, who's at number one?
Number one is, based on the way I've just spoken about the Cancelo situation, might come as a bit of a surprise, but I've put this at number one because I think it is phenomenal for everybody involved. It's grade A for player, grade A for club A, and grade A for club B. It's Endrick's loan to Lyon. Yeah. This is a deal I wanted to see. Endrick's going nowhere this season at Real Madrid. He got to the winter pause and he played about 90 minutes of football. Despite not really being injured, he'd made like three appearances. And by my count, he was the fourth choice striker at Real Madrid. He's slipped down below, well, obviously Mbappe, Vinny can play there, Jude can play there, Gonzalo Garcia now plays, that's called hat-tricks. It's just going nowhere. So Real Madrid needed to get him some minutes. They needed to get him some confidence. Endrick needs to play because he'll have his eye on obviously getting his career back on track, but also the World Cup squad.
Yeah.
The Brazil squad and Carlo Ancelotti's in charge. He's got to get in that team. And if he were to stay at Real Madrid for the rest of the season and play another 90 minutes over the course of 5 months, he was not going to the World Cup. And then Lyon, by my last count, and they have played one game since actually, so I'd have to check the stat. But from my last count, their top scorer in the league had 3 goals.
Wow.
So, goals needed? Yes.
Wow.
And Endrick will come in and score them. So let's have a look. Oh, sorry. Excuse me. Their top scoring striker had 3 goals. They have a midfielder who scored 8, but they are desperate need of a number 9 who produces goals. So this one just works for everybody. And I love it when a good plan comes together, Dean. You know, when everybody walks away really, really happy. That's exactly what's happened here. Madrid delighted. Endrick delighted. Lyon delighted.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a good move for him. And I'm kind of relieved that he's ended up going to a league like Liga. Because, I mean, obviously, this has been building up for a while. We all knew that Endrick was very likely to make a transfer. You know, clubs like West Ham are mentioned. I'm like, don't even come to, I didn't even want him to come to the Premier League, let alone to West Ham. And so when it became, because they got this, they seemed to seal this quite early, like it, coming in.
November.
Yeah, like genuinely, I think by the end of November, we knew that he was going to Lyon. And it was like a bit of a relief to just know that like, there was like a good end of the season to come for him because he should smash it. Like, I'm really excited now to see how many goals he scores between now and the end of the season because he'll be going into there thinking he's one of the best players in the league. Like, legit, like just lands in there, be like, yeah, right, just set me up because I won't miss. And it's exciting for the league as well. I think it'll get more eyes on it. And I think that I saw they played Monaco at the weekend. It was actually a very entertaining game, but I was mainly watching it because I knew that Tottenham were watching Akliouche in that game for Monaco. But I was like, yeah, Endrick in the mix as well he's going to be pretty good in this side. So,
yeah, he should be. And it's a relief, man. Like, you're in this business long enough. You talk about footballers like the way we do long enough. You build them up. You talk about how incredible they are, their potential. And then, of course, it doesn't always work out. And for Endrick, like, I don't feel like he's done that much wrong. It just hasn't worked. It just hasn't, like, life hasn't worked out for him so far. He's spoken really well about, like, he's like, oh, it's been, you know, he's tried to put on a really brave face, and it's like, he's talked about how it's been his most enjoyable season of his career so far. He's like, yeah, it's been, but the quote was something along the lines, well, it's been great because it's given me a chance to really spend time with the family. I was like, yeah, because you're not playing any football.
Stay at home, Dad.
We need to get you out of there. And look, he does, to me, it strikes me that he's a very technically talented player, a really good finisher, but at this stage of his career, probably not the most tactically pliable, you know, not the smartest presser, not the hardest worker, all those things. And if you're going to exist in this Xabi Alonso side right now, you're going to need to be the things I just mentioned. And if that's not you right now, fair enough, but you can sidestep that in January and just go and play some football. So I'm pleased for him, and I'm excited to see what he can do.
Yeah, very good. Was there anybody that came close to making your top five there? Obviously, you did say we've had 9 good deals or so.
There have been 9 deals. take out the bit where you said good. I mean, from Sporting's perspective, Sporting in Portugal, that is, they signed Luis Guilherme from West Ham for a pretty low fee. Looks like about 16 million euros. This is a player who 18 months ago joined West Ham for £25 million and has barely played.
Work.
So it's another situation where West Ham have, I think, managed a player very poorly. Now, I don't know exactly what he's been offering in reserves or training, or maybe he didn't take his chances. Maybe. But something went wrong there when they signed him for £25 million at 18 or 19, brought him over and were like, right, you're a left-footed right winger. Actually, our captain and best player is the same.
Like, look,
and
I mean,
we never drop
thinking.
Him. And
Yeah,
crap. Jared Bowen actually plays there. So
anywhere else
on, let's
can
just
play?
Let's think.
You ever played centre back?
Let's all take a step back. So I just feel like maybe spending that much money on that player at that point, because okay, if you're planning on selling Bowen, but clearly that was not the plan. Like, West Ham will clasp their hands around Jared Bowen until they're cold and dead, right? They are never going to contemplate the idea of selling
until next year in the championship.
Down, they would know. They know that, you know, that they would just be like, no. He's leading us back up as the captain. You know the deal. Why did you spend £25 million on a backup in that position then? So this was really silly, and Sporting effectively have just taken advantage of the situation. I'm sure he'll be great in Portugal, and I'm sure he'll be worth way more than 16 million euros in 6 months' time. And it will be another situation where West Ham fans are just like, well, we screwed that one up. And yeah, they kind of did. And the only other deal that's actually come off really is Alisson, who has moved to Aston Villa. But I don't know anything about him, so I can't really talk about him.
Yeah, I don't either. Not the goalkeeper,
no.
So as soon as that wasn't the case, I didn't know what we were looking at. So that's for sure.
The only thing I'll say about it is he cost £8 million, which by the Semenyo Brennan Johnson standard, I mean, this is a Tesco meal deal.
Yeah.
So like, this is nothing. So I assume this is a player who will train with the first team, you know, and that will be basically the limit of it. I'm not convinced that he's going to be particularly ready to enter Villa's team right now. So we'll just have to wait and see.
I do miss Tesco meal deals since I moved to America. So I'll be back soon.
Do you know what? So obviously not just Tesco, other supermarkets.
Sainsbury's ones are great.
And and Sainsbury's ones are really good. I got my hair cut today, and the barber, there's two barbers in the shop. I was the only one in there getting my hair cut. The one that was sat on the sofa waiting for a customer was like, right, I'm going to go get lunch. What was that sandwich you had earlier? And the one that was cutting my hair was like, oh yeah, I got a Sainsbury's meal deal. And it was absolutely banging. It's really good chicken sourdough baguette. And he started talking about the sandwich. And it very slowly dawned on me that I'd eaten that sandwich 1 hour earlier in a meal deal. I'd been to Sainsbury's and I'd got a meal deal, and I'd eaten the sandwich they were talking about.
Oh my God.
So I joined in the conversation, and the three of us had a conversation about a sandwich.
Mate, I wish in part three we were ranking meal deals. I'm going back to England in February, and one of the first thing I'm going to be doing anyway was running down to Sainsbury's and Costa for my old routine. Mm. And now that's the sandwich of choice that I'll be going for. We will be back in part three, where we'll be talking about some weird old stories that have been doing the rounds recently. Welcome back to Ranks FC, part three. Short and sharp here, Sam. You know, we used to do the old nonsense ranking. Sometimes we drag the main part into this part. But there's been a couple of things recently that I've seen reported. I'm like, it's just got to be made. It's got to be made up or just, it's just too wild. So I've got a few things that I want to talk about. The first one I'm going to talk about actually isn't that wild. It's just not going to happen. Raheem Sterling keeps getting linked to Newcastle. That's not going to happen. Newcastle aren't going to sign Raheem Sterling. All right. Now, Raheem Sterling is a good topic for this particular episode. There's another reason I wanted to bring him up, because you've got to make a transfer. Like, the guy's got to play football again. You're not that old, and he's not that bad. He's just got to find his right club. But Newcastle is not it, and I'm told that that is not going to be in contention. So I just... Well, she'll sign for Newcastle next week, now that I've said this. But
as I say, got bold for the man who ruled out Nicola Pepe to Arsenal once.
I'm just told that they're just not looking at this. I'm just told that it's just like, yeah, I mean, if I end up in Pepe territory, then you are the common denominator when I'm ruling out deals. I don't like to rule out deals very often. But
what about Sterling to Fulham? I saw that link.
Sterling to Fulham, I can kind of see. It's just, obviously, like, so the priority for Sterling, if he can, is stay in London. So there's not many options. It's basically Palace, Fulham, West Ham. Like, that's about it. He ain't going to go West Ham, apparently. So it's Palace and Fulham. I don't really want him at Fulham, but if it happens, it happens. Like, if we end up swapping Adama Traore out and getting in Raheem Sterling, then it's probably an upgrade, to be honest. So I'd take it.
Yeah.
West Ham again, like, on his trail, and they can have Adama Traore at this point. I don't know. I just told, anyway, Raheem Sterling to Newcastle, not a deal that they are looking into. Anyway, the other thing that has come up that is also Newcastle related, mate, is that as soon as, like, Maresca lost his job at Chelsea, Eddie Howe was linked as the next manager, right? I can't remember where I saw it, but I was like, hang on a minute. There's no way Eddie Howe's going from Piff to Bluco. Like, in terms of ownership, he's already been having to deal with this, and he's actually dealt with it quite well. But I think the only way this could be worse would be to go over to Bluco. It's probably if I was to draw up a list of clubs for Eddie Howe, I think it's the bottom one that would put him in, taken. Like, it's not happening. And even if they gave him a 6-year Liam Rossini style deal, like, no. Like, end of the season, Liam Rossini's like 14th in the league. Chelsea come with an offer. Don't do it. Don't do it, Eddie Howe, because that genuinely is nuts. That club is nuts, and you don't need it after what you've dealt with at Newcastle.
What's funny here is that, like, genuinely, Gary O'Neill is more likely to be the next Chelsea manager than Eddie Howe.
That's true.
Because Gary O'Neill has just taken the job at Strasbourg.
He's genuinely next in line. It's like a queue jump. You know, when you go to a theme park, you buy that lightning pass.
The bracelet, yeah.
We had a Gary Disney O'Neill's recently. We went, got the lightning pass. You book your slot in the line and you don't have to queue up. That's what Gary O'Neill's got. So you're right. He's more likely to land at Chelsea than Eddie Howe.
Also, odd timing on that one is that actually there have been question marks over Eddie Howe's, that the job that he's been doing at Newcastle this season, because once again, they've hit a season in which they're playing Champions League football and they're really struggling to balance the two competitions.
Yeah.
So it's always funny when you see a fan base going, oh, same old issues cropping up for Howe. We really need to figure this out because he's not doing well. And on the other hand, you see link to Chelsea. You're like, nah, these two things don't make sense.
Yeah. So the final one, and what made me want to actually talk about this segment of ridiculous news. So we've gradually got more ridiculous, but this was the one. A shock report claims that Real Madrid have bid £104 million for Ryan Gravenberch, who the Reds are considering selling. I mean, where do you even start?
What?
Where do you even start?
I can't believe how many places, like, went with the story. It was from Fichais in Spain, which is usually made.
We all know is.
Yeah. I can't believe how many places still use it. I mean, it's. Does it get? I don't know. Maybe it gets hits because it's so outrageous. I don't know, but I'm just like.
I'm pretty sure I know. I'm pretty sure they know what they're doing.
Ignore it.
Yeah, they know what
ignore
they're doing.
Ignore this.
You've got
don't
to
lift it.
You've
don't
got
touch
to blacklist
it because Liverpool ain't selling Ryan Gravenberch. Real Madrid aren't making a signing. Real Madrid definitely aren't making a £104 million signing. And Ryan Gravenberch ain't going to be close to joining Real Madrid anytime soon. Like, and the funniest thing is, I then saw a follow-up to this story saying that Liverpool are going to follow, Liverpool could lose Ryan Gravenberch, so they're lining up a deal to sign Adam Wharton. So I think Real Madrid would just go for Adam Wharton.
Yeah, let's cut out the middleman.
Just cut this out.
If you're Real Madrid, let's cut the middleman out. Let's spend less money on the player we actually want.
Hang on, why would they just not go for Adam Wharton, who've been linked with for the last year? And he's like, £80 million, or so, you know, Adam Wharton will take that. I was like, oh my God,
yeah.
This is what I have to deal with on a daily basis in the transfer world. Like, I do like silly season to a degree. I don't like it when stories like that just like go around everywhere and people start taking it seriously. So, like, oh, did you hear about Gravenberch? Real Madrid won him. Did they?
Can you imagine, first of all, can you imagine Real Madrid opting to spend that much money on a player this window full stop and choosing that position of midfield to spend it on when they've got all of these problems like almost everywhere else? And then also, can you imagine Liverpool without Ryan Gravenberch?
Exactly. That was the other thing. It was like,
oh my,
Reds are considering selling. What planet? Isn't you close to signing a new contract? Oh my goodness.
He's the one thing holding it all together.
Probably the next manager once slot goes next week. Sam, thank you for joining us, mate. It was great to chat with you over the course of the last hour again. Keep up the good work, mate, and well done for staying relevant. As I said at the start, you've done really well, mate. Good stuff.
yeah.
And we all miss you, so good stuff. Jack, we'll be back sometime soon.
Thank you,
he's in Uruguay, I think, at the moment.
Yeah, I've got a GPS tracker
on
him. I slipped it into his shoe before Christmas. Yeah. He doesn't know. He'll find out when he listens to this. So I know exactly where he is right now. And yes, he's in Uruguay.
Well, he sent a message to me and you, didn't he? He said, I've never been so disconnected from football.
Yeah, because I was the idiot watching, what was it? I was watching Sporting. I was watching Sporting.
Oh, yeah.
And he
oh,
wasn't.
Yeah, that was it.
And I was like, oh, Jack, you just missed a great goal from Luis Suarez to Sporting. I was like, wait a minute, am I Jack now?
Yeah, but then... And Jack's like, I've never been so disconnected from football, as he sent us a picture of himself in a Brazil shirt at the Maracana. It's like,
yeah, there were some holes in that statement,
mate.
Big time.
Like, I've just seen you post a minute ago that you were listening to Fulham commentary overlooking the Copacabana, and now you've got a Brazil shirt on at a football stadium. I think you're more connected to football than you realise, mate. It's in your veins,
yeah.
Jack. But we hope you're having a good trip right now. Come back safely and relatively soon. Thanks again to Sam Tai. Thanks again to all of you for listening. Remember, you can get more content over on the Patreon, which we have been combining a little bit more recently with our episodes over here. So you might get to make a guest appearance on the main pod. We'll be back next week. We'll catch you all on the other side. Cheers.